So let me start by asking you a question. Do you have a routine in your house, or do you have a number of routines? I wonder who makes the routines in your house, and I wonder who has to keep the routines. Are they fair? Do some people complain? Why do we have to always do it this way? If you think about the routines, the things that you always do and the way you always do them, have you ever stopped and asked, could there be a better way? In Genesis chapter 29, you know we're going through the book of Genesis, and it's taken us quite a while. We're now in chapter 29. And Jacob meets some shepherds who have a routine. And the interesting thing is that Jacob questions their routine. Now, if you go to someone's house and they always do something the way they always do it, you're probably better off the first, second, third time. Don't question their routine. Just accept it. You don't want to offend people. But Jacob meets these shepherds, and the first thing he does is to question their routine. So we're going to read from Genesis 29. But before we jump in to the text, let's just remind ourselves of what has happened so far in the life of Jacob. You will remember Jacob is the youngest of twins. He was born second, and as he came out, he was grasping his brother's heel, his brother's name being Esau. And as a result of this, he is named Jacob, which actually means deceiver, or an idiom that means he grasps the heel. And as he gets older, he seems to live up to his name somewhat, being a deceiver. Firstly, he sells his brother a bowl of lentil stew. I know how delicious that is. Gabby and I are trying to eat healthily at the moment, and we've got lentil soup, lentil stew at home. It's delicious, but, well, Jacob sold his brother a bowl of lentil stew in return for his birthright. Delicious, yes. Not sure it's worth quite that much. And secondly, he dresses up as his brother Esau, deceives his father, and steals his father's blessing, the one that should have gone to Esau. And as a result, it is not safe for Jacob to stay around his parents' home. And so he is on the run, and he is heading for his uncle's home. His uncle's name is Laban, and he is the brother of Jacob's mother, Rebekah. And on the way, Jacob has what I called, last time we spoke about this, a conversion experience in which he decides to make the living God his own personal God. Having gone through those experiences of deception, he gets to the point where he decides, yes, the Lord will be my God. Okay, so he is just about to arrive and to witness the shepherd's routine. So we are in Genesis 29 and verses 1 to 8. Then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern peoples. There he saw a well in the open country with three flocks of sheep lying near it, because the flocks were watered from that well. And notice here it says, the stone over the mouth of the well was large. And next we get the definition of their routine. Verse 3, when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone away from the well's mouth and water the sheep. Then they would return the stone to its place over the mouth of the well. Now we have to ask ourselves, why did they have this routine? Okay, logically, the stone was put over the mouth of the well. It would keep things like dust and dirt and earth and stones and, of course, animals, wild animals or domestic animals. So it has quite an important role, a protective role, having the stone over the well. But why wait until all the flocks were gathered? Wouldn't it have been easier to get them in batches? Water them, water one batch, and send them out again. It's what they do in schools. They do it here. There's a rota somewhere. It tells you which groups, which years come in for their school lunch, and then they come in, they eat, and they go out, and the next ones come in. So I'm confused why they had to have all the sheep present, all the flocks. It's not just all the sheep of a flock, it's all the flocks. Why did they have all of them present before they removed the stone? Let's read on. Verse 4, Jacob asked the shepherds, "My brothers, where are you from?" And they replied, "We're from Haran." And he said to them, "Do you know Laban, Nahor's grandson?" And they answered him, "Yes, we know him." Then Jacob asked them, "Is he well?" "Yes, he is," they said. "And here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep." And now we get to a very interesting point in the narrative. Jacob makes no comment about Rachel, but instead he has the audacity to tell the shepherds what to do. Yes, he tries to interfere with their routine. Verse 7, look at this. "Look," he said, "the sun is still high. It's not time for the flocks to be gathered. Water the sheep and take them back to pasture." Does that seem strange? Jacob has only just arrived and he is already telling the shepherds what to do. I'm wondering why he does that. Perhaps he wants the opportunity to talk to Rachel without all the shepherds listening in. I don't know. But his plan will not work because the shepherds have a routine and they're sticking to their routine. Look at verse 8. "We can't," they replied, "until all the flocks are gathered and the stone has been rolled away from the mouth of the well, and then we will water the sheep." Why did they have such a routine? I'll be honest with you, I don't know the answer, but I'm going to give you some ideas. Water is essential to life. Very essential to life. And maybe they had worked out that it was the best way to be sure that all the sheep get that precious drink of water that is so essential for life. Maybe in their region at that time, water was scarce. We know that water and fresh water is one of the biggest challenges facing our world today. Maybe water was scarce and they needed to be sure that it got shared around fairly. And if we fast forward to the gospel period, thinking about living water, the Spirit of God, living water is essential for life to believers too, for believers in Jesus. The shepherd's routine had to serve all the sheep in all the flocks. And likewise, routines in believers' lives and in the church must serve the flock, must serve the lost, must serve the cause of the gospel, and must serve the kingdom of God here on earth. And I would suggest this, that most of the time when we are in a church setting, most of the time routines should be respected because they're there for a reason. But sometimes it may be appropriate to break with tradition and change a routine. Let's move on, please, to slide number 2. When we were in the International Church in Romania, that was the last couple of years that we were there, there was this lovely guy, Danny, from Malaysia, and when we were together at a meeting or something, they would always laugh, because when it was time to leave, we would say, like, oh, well, I think we ought to be making a move. And for us, making a move meant it's time to go home. But to Danny, making a move means that you've seen a girl over there and it's time to go and talk to her. And, well, making a move. Let's see if Jacob makes a move. We're in verse 9. So, while he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep because she was a shepherd. And when Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of his uncle Laban, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Wow. He has certainly made a move. He went to the well and he moved the stone, presumably all by himself. The very stone that should not have been moved until all the flocks were assembled. So, he made a move, and I would suggest he made a dangerous move. It could have all gone wrong. You have to ask the question, how were the shepherds going to react to him? He takes a risk. He makes a move. And I think it appears that Jacob gets away with it. So much so that he makes another move. Verse 11. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. I wonder what the weeping meant. Was it a weeping of joy? Was it a weeping of, I finally found a life partner? And he told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah. So she ran and told her father. So there's lots of people making a move now. Jacob's made a move with the watering of the sheep, kissing Rebekah. Now Rebekah, she makes a move. She runs to her father. And Laban, you'll notice, her father makes a move too. Verse 13, as soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet her. That's Laban making a move. Fast. He's hurrying. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home and there told him, and there Jacob told him all these things. And then Laban said to him, you are my own flesh and blood. Happy families, eh? Everything's so nice. I'm sure they had some lamb biryani or something similar. We know about that, don't we? Okay. Let's move on to slide number 3, please. Naming your price. So let me ask you a question. Are you good at negotiating? If you are buying or selling something secondhand on eBay, are you good at naming your price? Just out of interest, because I've never bought anything on eBay. I've looked on it and thought it's too complicated, all this bidding nonsense. Just raise your hand. Who's ever bought something or sold something on eBay? Okay, we're a 25% tech-savvy church, so we can... The thing is, though, if you're going to sell something on eBay, you don't want to be ripped off, right? You don't want to sell it too cheap or pay too much, but you don't want to offend the other party either. Well, of course, it's kind of just online. You actually meet them face-to-face. In the olden days, you used to sell your second-hand car. A guy used to come around the house, and you'd stand in front of the car and look at the holes, and he'd kick it and say, well, that's rusty, and so on and so on. And there was that sense that you could offend each other. Jacob is just about to be asked to name his price. Let's read on. We're still in verse 14. After Jacob had stayed with Laban and the family for a whole month, Laban said to him, just because you are a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages are. Should be. So at this point, Jacob has to ask himself the question, what is the most important thing to me? Does he want cash? Does he want land? Or is there something else that he has his eye on? Verse 16. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes. Sadly, But Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. And Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, tell you what, I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel. And Laban said, well, it's better that I give her to you than to some other geezer. Stay here with me. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, and they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. And then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife. My time is completed, and I want to make love to her. I wonder how you feel about Laban's response to Jacob. I kind of misquoted it there. He actually says, it's better that I give her to you than to some other man. But even so, it's almost as if he is saying, well, I could do worse. And I just wish there was a bit more enthusiasm. But Jacob has named his price. He's declared what he expects for his work, and Laban has agreed to his terms. And at least one thing we can say, being that Laban is Jacob's uncle, presumably he will keep to his word, right? I mean, you can trust family in a way you can't trust other people. You would not expect blood relatives to deceive each other, would you? Well, hang on. Remember that Jacob, whose name means deceiver, has only recently sold his brother a bowl of lentil stew in return for his birthright, and only recently dressed up as his brother Esau to deceive his father and to steal his father's blessing, the one that should have gone to Esau. So, I don't know. I just hope that Jacob the deceiver is not going to be deceived himself. And yet, what does that popular idiom say? It's not in the Bible, I don't think, but the one I checked it online to check it was correct. What goes around comes around. Yeah? Let's move on to slide number 4. Have you ever been deceived? Have you? And how did you feel? And how did you respond? You see, when people deceive us, it can lead to loss. In many ways, it can lead to loss financially, if it's that kind of deception. It can lead to a loss of faith. It can lead to a loss of our reputation. And the way we respond can either go some way to improve the situation, or of course, if we respond badly, it can make the situation 10 times worse. Let's see how Jacob responds when he is deceived. Verse 22. So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob. And Jacob made love to her. And Laban gave his servant Zilpha to his daughter as her attendant. And when morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me? How will Laban explain himself now? And what solution will he offer? And perhaps more importantly, how will Jacob respond, bearing in mind that he is the one who is known as deceiver? How will he respond? He could get very angry at this point. Could be a very ugly situation. Let's have a look. Verse 26. Laban replied, well, you see, it's not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, and then we will give you the other one also in return for another 7 years of work. And Jacob did so. That's the bit that amazes me. Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her attendant. Jacob made love to Rachel also, and his love for Rachel was greater than his love for Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years. Let me ask you a question. Are you amazed that Jacob responded so calmly in this situation, especially considering his own deceitfulness in the past? I just want to throw in a maybe at this point. Maybe the fact that God had appeared to Jacob in chapter 28, and especially the fact that Jacob has chosen the Lord as his personal God, maybe that has affected his attitude towards Laban and helped him overcome Laban's deception. And just to remind you, from Genesis 28, verse 20, after God appears to Jacob, Jacob made a vow saying, "If God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my household." If God is going to do all that for me, it is as if he's saying, then the Lord will be my God. But if at that point he has some kind of a conversion experience, and let me remind you and all of us, we need to all have had that conversion experience. Was there a time in your own life that you decided, I will follow Jesus? The Lord will be my Lord. The Lord will be my God. Let's move on now. Number five, please. So, how great was Jacob? What do you think about Jacob so far? In what ways would you like to be similar to Jacob? And in what ways would you prefer not to be like him? Well, by the time we get to the New Testament, Jacob was considered to have been very great. When Jesus met the Samaritan woman by a well in Samaria, the woman made reference to Jacob as their father, collectively, and also makes reference to him as being very great. Just to clarify, in case you've numbered all the wells, they were standing by a well in Samaria, Jesus with the Samaritan woman, deemed to have been given to them by Jacob, but I don't think we're talking about the same well or the same location as the well in the time of Laban. I just wanted to clarify that. However, the woman of Samaria says to Jesus, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is pretty kind of deep. Where can you get this living water?" And then she asks, "Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" I want to focus on the woman's question to Jesus. "Jesus, are you greater than our father Jacob?" What can we say? How would you answer? I would say this: yes, Jacob was very great. So great that he was considered as one of the patriarchs of Israel, one of the founding fathers. So great that he was the first to be called Israel. And I reckon he was pretty great in a physical sense. I think he was pretty strong, because earlier today in our chapter 29, we read the stone over the mouth of the well was large, and normally it was the shepherds, plural, who would roll the stone away from the mouth of the well. But it appears on the day that Jacob meets Rebekah, it would appear that Jacob rolls that stone away all on his own. Maybe he was trying to impress Rachel. But it still suggests that he was pretty strong. But the woman of Samaria, her question is, are you greater than our father Jacob? Think for a moment about the significance of what Jacob did. He removed the stone so that the sheep could drink and live. And Jacob poured himself out. I mean, if you're kind of like, you've had a shower and you've got on some nice clothes and you're clean and you've perfumed yourself and so on, you don't really want to be faffing around moving stones and getting hot and sweaty and covered in sheep and everything. Jacob poured himself out for the benefit of the sheep. And it would appear that he did it single-handedly. I would say, yes, Jacob was pretty great. But let's move on, please, to our last slide. How great was Jesus? Can you think of someone else who poured himself out for the sheep? You see, in John chapter 10 and verse 10, Jesus says, the thief, referring to Satan, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And can you think of another stone that got rolled away? After Jesus had poured himself out for us, the sheep who had gone astray, after he had died on the cross, and after he had been buried, we read of another stone being rolled away. Let's read this account from Matthew 28 of a stone being rolled away. Matthew 28, verse 1. After the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. And there was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and they became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Before we move on, let me just make sure that we understand what actually happened at the resurrection of Jesus and correct what might be a popular misconception. You see, before the angel rolled back the stone, Jesus had already risen. Jacob had to move the stone to get the water out of the well. But Jesus was already out of the tomb. The angel said, he is not here, present tense. He has risen, past tense. He has already risen. I believe that the angel did not roll back the stone to let Jesus out because he had already risen. No, the angel rolled back the stone so that the two Marys could see for themselves that Jesus was not there. So as we draw to a close, we can answer the question that the Samaritan woman asked Jesus. Are you greater than our father, Jacob? And what is the answer? The answer has to be yes. Jesus is greater than Jacob. Jacob rolled back the stone from the well so that the sheep could drink and live. But Jesus rose from the dead before the stone had even been rolled away, so that we, his sheep, can come to him and drink and live forever. Jesus, the one who said in John chapter 7, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." And by this, of course, he meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive. Because, of course, as you're aware, up until that time, the Spirit had not been given, since Jesus had not been glorified. Jesus, before his death and resurrection, was talking about what was going to happen. And he's saying, "Come to me if you're thirsty and drink." And that promise is valid for us today. Amen.